The Best of the Drive with Steve Jackson, a weekly one-hour recap of the best of last week's interviews with national newsmakers in politics, entertainment, and the arts.
Our first guest this afternoon served as White House counsel for President Richard Nixon from July 70 until April 73 and became involved in the Watergate scandal that eventually took the president down. He is now an author, columnist, commentator on contemporary politics and a great man to talk to. He's been with us before, and it's great to have Mr. John Dean back with us. John, thanks so much for taking the time.
Hi, Steve.
I believe we talked about this last time you were on. You're critical of conservatives and the Republican Party and actually supported efforts to impeach George W. Bush.
Well, I'm not even sure I recognize the Republican Party.
I
don't think my former president, Richard Nixon, would be called a Republican today.
Wow.
I just finished a teaching post at the University of Arizona State University, where I was the Goldwater Professor of American Institutions. And in talking to students, I said I wasn't even sure that Barry Goldwater could qualify as a Republican today.
It is amazing. And I just saw an article today in theweek.com, and it said the GOP now belongs to Donald Trump. Do you believe that? I mean, is this...
Well, he certainly brought some new voters in, but I'm not sure, no one's really quite sure what they are yet, whether they really are going to stay and play as Republicans, or they just are protest voters this year round. I think it's too early to tell, but he certainly, as the presumptive nominee and then as the nominee, will have the right to control the party. The party. I actually did an article a couple of weeks ago for I write for Justia.
Right. Yeah.
Their section called Verdict. I did a piece on the fact that really Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump make the point that really has been evolving. You don't need the party anymore. In fact, you don't. Most presidential candidates don't even use the party anymore. What happens is the parties, both Republicans and Democrats, have great voter data information, but they really don't have much control over who gets a nomination. We don't have smoke-filled rooms anymore,
right,
where the bosses can agree or not agree upon who it would be. You know, and it's also quite remarkable for a long time in our history how well the back room did in getting a good candidate out there. We've had a lot of great presidents who came out of smoke-filled rooms.
Yeah, and we don't see anything like that anymore, obviously, but it has taken a whole new turn, as we know, with someone like Trump doing as well as he has done. Do you really believe he can beat Hillary Clinton, assuming it's her?
If there is no terrorist attack between now and November, I think he's got a rougher road than people think. He's a novelty right now. I don't know how well he will wear. If you've ever spent a lot of time in the New York market, people are kind of bored with him up there. Because he's been a feature in that market for a long time.
Right.
He's playing on a bigger stage, and he did well on his television reality show for people who were into that kind of television, but didn't play well beyond it. So I don't know how I think that she's a known commodity. He will try to trash her. And at some point, people will probably get exhausted with that.
It's exhausting already.
It is exhausting.
We've still got 6 months to go. What are your thoughts on Bernie Sanders? I mean, again, who expected him to do this?
Well, I'm not sure he's a Democrat, but I think he's trying to influence the Democratic Party. I think he'd like to leave a platform behind at minimum, which nobody will pay any attention to as soon as it's written and
the convention's
completed.
Over. Yeah.
I can't recall a party plank in either party's platform ever having any consequence anywhere for any time beyond the convention.
The conservative movement has gone so kablooey, to use a
well-known political term.
Yes, that's what I was trying to say. Thank you, John. It really, I mean, its natural base really kind of started with the anti-New Deal people back in the FDR days, right? I mean,
it did.
The modern conservative movement. And now, who knows where it's at? And as you pointed out, who knows who's going to show up at the polls in November?
Yeah, that's a good question. And the other interesting factor, this is the first year we're going to have really a lot of new, stricter voting laws. Republicans, particularly in red states, have changed voter identification requirements and made them much tougher. A lot of people are going to go to the polls and find they can't vote. What impact that'll have, no one is quite sure how it's going to play. Because in the primaries, where some of those new laws came to effect, they affected the Republicans as much as they did the Democrats, much to the chagrin of the Republicans.
Yeah, right. Man, it's fascinating, and it's going to be a crazy ride.
I'll tell you, it's probably the most good theater we've had in a long time in a presidential campaign.
Yep.
The primaries were certainly that. Trump is a master of the media in knowing how to draw attention to himself and to keep. You know, he's had. You know, when no one really knows what he believes.
Exactly,
because he won't on both sides of most issues.
Exactly, and he won't be specific on anything.
And he flips position. You know, one day he was going to turn over his tax returns. Now he's saying it's none of your business.
Yeah, and there's so many examples like that over the past 10 months. It's just,
how's he playing up in your neighborhood?
Not well. Not here in very liberal, progressive Northern California, but it's going to be fascinating to see.
But I suspect Bernie is.
Bernie is, yeah.
Bernie going to carry California, you think?
I don't know. I was going to ask you what you think. I think he could. I don't think he ultimately will, though.
I think it'll be, you know, if he can somehow marshal young people, new voters,
yeah.
I think he could probably squeak out a win. But again, we have proportional voting.
Exactly.
In for the primary, so it really won't advance him that much further.
Right, exactly. Well, I certainly appreciate you taking the time.
Always a pleasure.
John Dean, thank you so much, and I hope we can talk again.
Likewise.
All right. Take care.
The best of The Drive with Steve Jackson.
Joining us now, as I always say, one of my favorite people to talk to. Great guy. Very talented political commentator. He's got the Bill Press Show, 6 to 9 Eastern Time in the mornings. And you can go to BillPressShow.com to follow all that and listen. His latest book is Buyer's Remorse, How Obama Let Progressives Down. Our good friend and Drive Hall of Famer, Bill Press. William, how are you, sir?
Hey, man. How you doing? Happy Monday.
You too.
50 days to go. 50 days and 6 days till the first debate.
Yeah, a week from tonight. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Now, did you see Trump after the weekend's activities in Jersey and New York, you know, saying that the cops have to profile everyone?
Yeah, of course, right? I mean, talk about somebody who knows nothing about what he's talking about, but right. Just that never stops him, right? And, you know, I thought today was like a reminder of what dangerous times we live in, for sure, a reminder of how much more experienced and better our law enforcement agencies have become at dealing with terrorism. Boy, they got this guy pretty fast.
Yeah, no kidding.
Remarkably fast. But also a reminder of how much is at stake on November 8th. I mean, this is too dangerous a world to trust a madman like Donald Trump to be in charge. You know? I mean, with that kind of rhetoric and his propensity for violent talk, he'll just make things worse.
Yeah, exactly. And God knows around the world what could happen, you know.
So, pretty scary.
But how do you think this is going to play out next Monday? Because there's no audience. It's just a moderator, apparently, and Trump and Clinton. I mean,
you know, first of all, I think it's going to be the most watched debate in the history of humankind.
I agree.
It's also, I think it could be more than any other single event, what determines the outcome of this election. And you've got, like, ships passing in the night. You know, on the one hand, you're going to have the best debater alive today, I think, in Hillary Clinton, and certainly the best prepared ever. And then you're going to have the least prepared, the least knowledgeable guy who's just going to get up on the stage and wing it. Now, unfortunately, I think the expectations are so low for Donald Trump, right? You know, that as long as he doesn't fall on his face or drool down his necktie.
Or call her bad names.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I'm thinking.
Yeah, people will say, oh, you know, God, look at Donald Trump. He was presidential. He didn't fall off the stage in an hour and a half. But I think the contrast is going to be, it's got to be pretty telling, because, you know, we saw in the however many, what was it, 15 Republican debates in the primary, you know, he never really had anything to say
right.
other than lobbing off a few insults and then sort of standing back and letting other people go back and forth.
And so, he's not, yeah, and he's not going to have any teleprompter for this.
No teleprompter, and no, right. And, you know, Lester Holt is a damn good newsman,
yeah.
and I really trust him to follow through with good, tough, probing questions and pin Donald Trump down.
You know, it was Friday when he did his big birtherism thing, finally saying Obama was born in the U.S., but then he mentioned something. It was kind of a off-the-cuff remark where he said Hillary's Secret Service bodyguards should be disarmed, and then we'll see what happens.
I just wrote a column about how many times we've come to the point where he said, this is it. He's finally going over the line.
Yeah.
But of all the things he said, even worse than the birther thing, I think, is this the second time now he suggested that the answer to a Clinton election, you know, is to assassinate her. I mean, when he said before, well, if she's elected, there's no way you can stop her from making liberal appointments to the Supreme Court. Oh, well, I guess you guys who have guns could figure it out, right?
Right. Yeah.
The Second Amendment. And then this one, taking away her Secret Service protection. I mean, what does that mean? First of all, he's got the same level of protection.
Right.
And he's had it throughout this campaign. So what are you going to do? Take away all the Secret Service from the White House, protecting the president and his family? I mean, it's insane. But it plays into what the NRA, right, is always trying to make, that if you are for gun control, then you are for taking away everybody's guns, right? Or there will be no guns at all. And that's not what people who, like President Obama or me or you, who are for reasonable gun safety measures, background checks, smart guns, right?
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the Second Amendment.
Exactly. No assault weapons in private hands. That's nothing. They're not related at all. Dangerous guy. Dangerous.
Oh, man. It just makes me crazy that the polls are showing how close this is. I can't believe it.
You know, I can't either. And it just really troubles me, because the national polls, which are meaningless, are like 1 or 2 points. But then you go to the battleground states, and so many of the battleground states are close. I mean, how can anybody take this guy seriously? This election should be 20. There should be a 20-point difference between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump,
yeah,
at least.
I agree.
And there's not. But the one thing that gives me hope, right, and the Washington Post has reported this, I've been using it every day on my show, and you can steal it. Since 1992, there are 17 states and the District of Columbia that have voted Democratic. That adds up to 242 electoral votes. That's where Hillary starts.
Yeah.
In that same period, there are 13 states, smaller states, that have voted Republican. That's where Trump starts. That's 102 electoral votes.
Yeah.
So when you start with the difference between 242 and 102, we know how this thing should go. And I can't believe he could turn around that huge advantage he has.
Yeah, that's what I feel too, basically. And at least I tell myself that so I can sleep.
But you know what? It's not going to be easy. And people have got to get out there and really work their butts off.
The book, this interesting, sometime last week, a friend of mine was asking, we were talking about you, and they asked about the book and asked if they could borrow it from me. And I said, of course. It's Buyer's Remorse, How Obama Let Progressives Down.
Tell them to buy their own.
Yeah, I know. I probably should. I'm sorry. I'll charge them and send you the money. but talk about it, because we talked about it when it was first released, but we haven't talked much about it now. Give my listeners a kind of an overview of what you're thinking and what you wrote.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, it is a book written by a Democrat, me, a supporter of President Obama, me, but also a proud progressive, me, and one who had expectations, I guess, maybe too high, that President Obama would prove to be the progressive president that we have all been looking for and waiting for and praying for. And he certainly, I think, gave that promise during his campaign. And while I think he has done, he's been a really good president, he's done some great things, he's also let us down, progressives down, I believe, in many ways. And so what I tried to do in the book is just, and I wrote it based on sitting in the White House briefings for 7 years,
right,
following him every day and going to every news conference, so up close, and gave him credit for all the good things he's done, like rescuing the auto agency. I think Obama's a mixed bag, I would say, but certainly bringing this country back from the brink of economic disaster, ending the war in Iraq.
He got bin Laden.
He got bin Laden. I mean, you can go on, and the Iran nuclear deal, the opening up to Cuba, all those are things I give him credit for. At the same time, you know, there are many ways, say, like getting rid of the public plan option, dropping that. For the first 4 years of his administration, he did said absolutely nothing about gun safety, gun control,
yeah,
letting us down on that front. For the first 4 years, he did nothing at all about immigration reform. And by that time, you know, the House had been taken over and the Senate taken over by Republicans, so it was too late to get anything done. So there are many, many areas where the president just failed to fight the good fight. The minimum wage hasn't gone up under him. He waited too long to do that. He promised something called the Employee Free Choice Act for labor unions. That was their number one priority when he ran in 2007, 2008. Did absolutely nothing about it. Now it's harder, tougher than ever for people to form a labor union. So I just chronicle the good things he's done and the disappointing things he's done.
Yeah.
And make the point that now that we know it's going to be Hillary, we've got, and she moved to the left thanks to Bernie Sanders, that now the challenge is to make sure that when she's elected, I say confidently, she stays to the left and she really delivers the progressive agenda, which she has promised to deliver.
It's Buyer's Remorse, a great book, How Obama Let Progressives Down.
Thank
available
you,
everywhere,
yep.
And go to BillPressShow.com. Okay, I'm not going to lend the book out to anyone, so
go
buy a copy. And you can listen to the Bill Press Show on BillPressShow.com as well. Bill, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank
right,
you so
Steve.
Much.
All right.
All right, buddy. We'll talk soon.
See you, man.
The best of The Drive with Steve Jackson.
Joining us right now, the one and only Tommy Chong. Tommy, thanks so much for doing this. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing fine. I'm just sitting here medicating.
Yes, that's what we're doing, too. Actually.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So,
420. It's still 420.
Yeah, we celebrated big time the other day.
Okay. But you know that the holiday goes during the 20s. It doesn't end until the 30s.
Exactly. You know what? On 420, we actually played that Funny or Die thing about the you know, origin of 420 with you and Cheech.
Oh, right.
That was great stuff, man.
That was funny. Yeah.
It was very good. Listen, I'll start by saying I met you and Cheech, and it was probably 1972, maybe 1973. It was East Lansing, Michigan. I was going to Michigan State University. You guys performed there. And afterwards, because we were part of the group that were booking shows there at Michigan State, and we all went to a friend's house, and you guys came, and we continued partying. And one of the things that stood out to me at that point was we were talking to you, and you guys mentioned that when you're on the road, back then at least, you would go to the YMCA and play basketball and work out. And
Yeah, we did.
That was very cool. We were all kind of going, well, I wouldn't think Cheech and Chong would be doing that, but, you know, what do we know?
Well, you know, I've been working out all my life, you know, before I met Cheech. When I was 16 years old, I discovered weight training, and then I was pretty heavy into it.
Wow.
And it kept me healthy, you know, like I'm in my almost 80, and I still got a body of a 17-year-old, you know.
Yeah, you're going to be 78 next month, right?
That's right.
Oh, man.
That's right, yep.
Well, you look good, you sound good, and what made you and Cheech decide to go hit the road again?
You know, we there's so many people that heard about us and never seen us, you know?
Yeah, no
kidding. And we just have a lot of fun on the road, you know, whenever we're on the road. Well, you think about what we do. You know, I mean, we just talk about dope, we smoke dope, and we go home and watch dope movies.
And make dope movies.
Yeah, make dope movies and just have a dope time, you know. It's really the way to live.
You actually started out in the 60s as a musician, right, out of Canada?
That's right. Yeah. I was a black guy for many years, yeah.
Well, yeah, you were signed to Gordy Records, which was a subsidiary of Motown, and I grew up
That's
in Detroit.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, you did? You grew up in, oh, you're a black guy too, huh?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Aren't we all?
Yes, yes. If you go in Detroit and you didn't leave when the riot was on, then you're honorary. Black guy.
Yeah, in 67 during the riots, there were tanks and stuff from the National Guard coming down our street.
I bet.
It was crazy.
Exciting times, huh?
Yeah. So what about movies? You two, now that you're back on the road and stuff, you guys planning any other films?
You know, I just like to write them. I don't want to do them anymore. You know?
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Once you write them and you read it, you think, oh, that'd make a great movie. And then I put it on the shelf. I've written about a good 5 or 6 good Cheech and Chong movies. We might. You know, right now it's not a good time. So, you know, because there's really hardly any movie industry left unless you're Iron Man. You know.
Right. Cheech and Chong with car chases and Transformers and yeah,
that would work. We could be superheroes, but we're folk heroes. I'd rather be a folk hero.
You definitely are. You are a folk hero. Yeah.
Yeah.
How long is this tour? I mean, are you doing a lot of gigs or?
No, it's really, you know, I was sick there for a while, so we had to cancel a lot of gigs.
Right.
And we're just kind of catching up. On everything now, you know, now that I'm better and I'm vertical, and so we can you know, catch up on the gigs. But we haven't been to we're just doing like really class theaters now, you know, where it's really easy to work, you know, no more Coachella type gigs, you know.
Just, yeah, that takes a lot out of you.
Gigs where you can, you know, be human and have a good time.
Tommy Chong is with us. How did you and Cheech hook up? I know I've known it in the past. I just right now tell our audience how you guys got together.
You got a little 420 mind. Huh?
Yes, I do.
we met in Canada. Cheech was up there. He was part of a secret army made of mostly of Mexicans in case a Viet Cong attack from Alaska, you know. And I was running a sort of like a homeless shelter, a topless nightclub for you know, guys that were up there fighting the war. And I realized, you know, I'd been fired from Motown. I was with Motown, and then I got fired. Because I had to get a green card, and the people that were working for Motown didn't know what a green card was. They thought I was just trying to get out of a gig. And so they fired me, and I stayed fired. And then I met up with Cheech, and then I realized that... Do you remember a group called The Committee in San Francisco?
Oh, of course. Very funny, very clever, and a lot of folks became very famous out of that.
Yeah, well, I was one of them that used to sit in the audience and just marvel at how genius these guys were. And so I started my own committee-type group up in Canada with the Topless Nightclub. And then Cheech joined up as part of the troupe. And then when the troupe broke up, Cheech was the only one that wanted to keep going. And so we teamed up, and the rest is history.
Wow. Unbelievable. Tommy Chong. Tommy, thanks so much.
Thank you, and I'm going to go 420 right now.
All right. Cool, man. Take care. We'll be right back with more of The Best of The Drive.